Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And guess who's calling in from Europe for the joke of the week?
Guten Tag, Chris Jericho. This is Stefan Kagan reporting to you from Central Berlin, just a mere two blocks from Checkpoint Charlie. Maybe eight blocks away from Brandenburg Gate. Played the show here last night. My daughter graduated high school the day before. Boy, am I jet lagged, Chris. So I called in this morning. And I called in the guys. I said, I got a wee cough. And the tour manager said, "You got a wee cough?" I said, "Thanks, tour manager." So now I'm just lounging around for a while. Thank you very much. Bye.
Yes, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan never lets us down, no matter where he is in the world with Guns N' Roses or Walking Paper, delivering the laughs every single Friday, no matter what or where he's doing. He's got that type of time for all of us here on Talk is Jericho. And thank you to Duff for the joke of the week. And thank you to Chris Slade, Talk is Jericho alumni, who has since returned to AC/DC. Since the last time we spoke to him, he appeared on this show just a few weeks before getting the call to rejoin his band. Chris is telling that story, talking about Brian Johnson leaving AC/DC and Axl Rose coming aboard. You hear all about Axl's audition, who else they considered before offering the gig to Axl, and what it was like touring with him. Chris is also talking about the retirement of bass player Cliff Williams, what the future might be for AC/DC, whether he might be a part of it, his relationship with Angus, his loss of Malcolm, all things AC/DC. And as you know, they don't do interviews. This is an exclusive conversation, getting the scoop right here on Talk is Jericho. Get ready to rock with AC/DC drummer Chris Slade, and get ready to rock with Fozzy this summer. All dates, VIP meet and greet information, and ticket information at FozzyRock.com. We're starting off in July doing some festivals in the States. Rock USA in Oshkosh, the Cadott Rock Fest in Cadott, Wisconsin, Peoria Riverfront in Peoria, Belvedere, Illinois at the Apollo Theater. Then we head over to Europe starting on July 26th at the Pfezzen Festival in Hungary, going all across Europe, Prague, Sebron, Germany, Zurich, Pinerello di Servia in Italy, Slovenia, Wacken Festival in Germany, Berlin, Bochum, Aschaffenburg, Alicante, Spain, Alcatraz in Belgium, Bloodstock in England. We're going all around the horn. And then, of course, we return to the United States August 24th for the Judas Rising Tour Next Leg with Adelita's Way, Stone Broken, and The Stir. Check out all those dates at FozzyRock.com for all information and ticket information. Don't forget also to listen to The Rock of Jericho, not Talk is Jericho, The Rock of Jericho on Sirius XM Octane. We're doing it twice a month. And I think today we're dropping a new episode. Lots of great stuff going on, including AC/DC drummer Chris Slade returning to Talk is Jericho right here, right now. Here we go. All right. So we're here in London with two returning guests, the father and son team, Jack Slade, who just did the worst WrestleMania preview podcast.
Still the best. Though.
Still the best.
Oh, yeah.
And then your dad, Chris Slade.
Hello.
Hello. And the last time we spoke to you was about your whole entire career. And just about, now Jack, you have to help me out with this.
Okay.
Just about that time was when the issues with Phil Rudd and AC/DC happened, or had they already happened?
When it was originally recorded?
No, when Chris and I first did our podcast. Yeah,
that was actually before the issues happened.
Right. So yeah. We had talked about your whole career, and then about
two or three
months after the show aired, suddenly you're back in AC/DC.
Yeah. I think it was the other way around because you guys recorded it before the issues happened. Then we found out about the issues,
right.
And then it was released as everything was reintroduced.
What's going on?
You know, to be honest, I think I knew at that point. I can't remember. There was something I remember because I did that talk to you in my kitchen, and I think I sort of knew something, but I couldn't say anything.
So tell us the story about how everything went down to for your return to AC/DC after 24 years, 25 years, something
hell of
like
a
that.
Long time.
Yeah. So tell us how that all went down.
I was on the road in Switzerland doing gigs with my band, Chris Slade Timeline. And I was supposed to be ready at like something like 7:30 to go to the gig. And my phone rang. Oh, it's not ringing now. Anyway. And it was AC/DC's manager. And he went, you know, blah, 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 you know, chat. And the guys would like you back and all the rest of it, like that sort of thing. And I went, really? And my tour manager at the time is hammering on the door, the room door, the hotel room door. And I open the door and I'm still got my phone in my ear. And he goes, come on, come on, we got to go, we got to go. I go, AC/DC. And he goes, oh. And runs away.
Right. So yeah, the gig had to wait that night.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I wasn't late, but later than he wanted me to be. That's all.
It's the one time you could pull the rock star card.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Totally. That's right.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Didn't you tell me though, Jack, that there's some kind of a he got some kind of a text or something like that about his drum?
Dad probably doesn't remember this because he doesn't remember my name. But yeah, you said you had a text from Dick. Saying like, if you were to have a kit, how big a riser do you want? Do you remember that?
Yeah, but that was after.
Was it?
Yeah, that was the first indication that I got in Switzerland at that time that I was.
Oh, maybe I was confusing it. Well,
asked back into the band. No, but Dick. Yeah, Dick Jones. This is the AC/DC long-serving drum tech and tea maker. he's Welsh like myself,
right?
He's a very funny guy, extremely funny guy. But yeah, there was a point where he texted me and said, what size, how high do you want your drum riser?
And then also about the flight, you know, if you wanted to fly out to LA, you know, would you what class would you want? And he didn't want to rock the boat. I remember you telling me that as well.
What class of ticket?
Yeah. What else is there? What other type of ticket could there possibly be?
Was he asking if you wanted first class or business class or something like
that? Yeah,
this? Yeah. Right. What'd you tell him?
That's classified. What do you think?
So basically they tell you that they want you back into the band.
Yeah.
And then it was very quickly after that you're flying to Los Angeles to rehearse.
Yeah, actually it was a few months, but yeah, and I can't remember without my diary, forget it. But it was a couple of months, I think. And it was secrecy. It's like you can't tell anybody anything, which is what it was like the first time around. And there was this conjecture, which isn't a bad thing when you want to publicize something. Here's an upcoming tour. We don't know who the drummer is. You know, so you know, I can understand that, and right. I played into it. We had people at rehearsal place standing outside going, well, I don't know, it sounds like Phil Rudd playing, I'm not sure who's... And then we'd have people driving, or we'd have lunch, say, and it was all under a tent, and we'd have cars driving around. It's a big rehearsal area. And there's a square in the middle, more like a rectangle, actually. But the cars would drive around and take pictures of the tent. And they go, oh, that silhouette, that shadow on the tent looks like a bald head. It could be Chris Slade. And it's like, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Well, because AC/DC is famous for being very tight-lipped on everything.
Yes.
You know, it's very much nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows much about it. But when you guys were rehearsing, Like, what was it like? Like the first time you walk into rehearsal and see these guys that you haven't seen in 25 years.
Yeah. Well, it was great. It felt the same, to be honest, as it was whatever 25 years ago. I haven't looked at the chronology of it, but it's something like that. And it was like, hi guys, you know, hello. You know, want a cup of tea? Yeah, okay.
Here we go.
Yeah, it was very much, you know, and I knew half the crew anyway from before. And Dick Jones, being the guy he is, he made me a cup of tea. And it was just ordinary.
So when you were rehearsing, first of all, how long did you have to rehearse before the tour started?
It was quite a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, months.
Mm.
Because don't forget, there was Malcolm was no longer
right
with the band. So, and replacing Malcolm is a serious, serious thing, because he's the backbone to the band, always was. You just got to listen to the records to hear his contribution in rhythmic terms, and I've always said, I think I said it last time, genius player, absolute genius player and writer. Him and Angus together, what tracks they come up with. It's unbelievable. Sadly, Malcolm's no longer with us, so...
Right, yeah, Malcolm, at the time, Malcolm was out of the band due to his issues. So you've got the tightest rock and roll machine of all time.
Yeah, Stevie did a great job.
And the rhythm section is basically gone because Phil was out and Malcolm wasn't able to play. So you're rehearsing and replacing two guys, not just one.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, Angus was seriously missing his brother, you know, he hadn't died yet, but he was seriously missing. Stevie did a wonderful job, because it's probably the hardest job you can possibly have.
Absolutely.
Trying to replace Malcolm. The man was a genius. And I can say was now, but... You know, at that time he was still alive, but very poorly. So Stevie did a great job. We spent a few months rehearsing, relatively relaxed, and it was almost every day without a day off to start with. And I'm sure Angus was being very wound up, if you like, because brother not there for a start, backbone not there. But we got through it, and I think it sounded great.
Well, and the band was very tight, and like I said, as by reputation had to be. So when you were rehearsing at first, was it the whole band, or was it just you and Stevie and Angus, or with Cliff, or how did Angus structure these rehearsals to break in two new guys who had both played with the band before, but at different times? Because for you, you'd never played in AC/DC without Malcolm Young either.
That's
so
exactly
it's different
right
for you as well.
Yeah, it started with the whole band, with Cliff and Brian also, and I think they went away for about 2 weeks, and we spent some time going in and topping and tailing, if you like, without Brian singing, which is actually, it's a good exercise. Oh yeah, one of the crew played bass, so it was like...
Yeah.
So there was Angus, you know, and two guys who had been in the band before.
Right.
And a crew guy playing bass,
who did
a great job, by the way.
Wow.
So, you know, and then after, it wasn't more than 2 weeks, it might have been 10 days, that Cliff and Brian came back and we continued as a band.
And now, were most of the songs the same ones that you had played before?
Some. To be honest, I've never... compared.
Well, I think there was a few, like I can probably go through it myself. I think Rock and Roll Train was new. You had a couple new ones from Rock or Bust.
Yep.
But that's probably pretty much it, because they didn't do anything off Stiff Upper Lip, I don't think. You guys didn't do anything really off of any of those other albums. Black Ice didn't have any. Oh, yeah, Rock and Roll Train. But other than that, there's pretty much the same set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, from what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. Of course, I hadn't done that set too much, although all the main ones were there, of course.
The classics, yeah.
Yeah, you know, of course, Back in Black. All that's Highway mm-hmm. to Hell. Mm-hmm. All that was, you know, obviously we'd be doing those anyway. But it was the newer ones. But, you know, it turned out great, as far as I'm concerned. And as far as all the comments online were concerned, although there was a huge, Slade isn't as good as Rudd, you know, what's he thinking of? And all. It's nothing to do with me. I just turn up and play.
But you're always going to get that, though.
There's absolutely.
There's always people that are going to complain that, you know, Mark Evans still isn't in the band or whatever it may be, you know. Exactly. So what was it like going back on tour with AC/DC, you know, the biggest rock and roll band on the planet? And you, like you said, you've been doing Chris Slade's Timeline and a lot of shows that are kind of in clubs and in smaller venues. And now you're going back to play, you know, the stadiums and arenas of the world.
It was such a blast. I never expected to ever do it again in my life, to be honest. And to get that opportunity was just mind-blowing. To even be asked, I had to ask the manager in that phone call in Switzerland. I said, have the guys asked you to call me? And he said, oh, yeah, yeah, of course, the guys all know.
Guys meaning Angus, basically.
Well, all of them.
Yeah.
All of them. Even though it ended last time, the first time, under a bit of a cloud for me, it was, I mean, everything turned out fantastic. Mm-hmm. What can I say? Everything was brilliant, but what a rush to know the type of shows we were doing, like 80,000 people a night.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. They were even bigger than the time I was in the band
first.
Even bigger.
Yeah.
Which was big anyway.
Right.
But my God, it was just mind-blowing to see that many people every night.
So what's it like when we came, Jack and I were there to see you at Dodger Stadium?
Yeah.
Which was great because we got to take a motorcade.
Oh, the convoy.
Oh, yeah.
Convoy,
yeah.
Like a police escort to get to Dodger Stadium. But what's it like, you know, on a tour day with AC/DC? What's kind of the daily? Do you guys sound check? Are you beyond that at this point?
No, never sound check.
Really?
Never have sound checked.
Really?
Yeah. The crew sound check for us. Dick plays drums.
Yeah.
No, I never sound checked with AC/DC, even the first time around. Hmm. Just go on and play, and Dick sets the drums up perfectly. Just walk on, pick my sticks up, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Go.
Yeah. Now, was it harder now being, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how old you are, but probably getting close to late 60s, early 70s at this point.
No, I'm 71 right
71.
Now,
okay.
As we speak.
Great. So once again, it's 25 years later. You're still playing drums. You're still doing all the stuff that you've done. But playing, you know, a two-hour AC/DC show with that monstrous Let There Be Rock section that we talked about last time where you're just going do-da-do-da for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Was it still old hat for you, or is it a little bit harder now that you're in your 70s?
No? It wasn't harder at all. Mm-hmm. It's hard anyway, to the point of exhaustion, to be honest. And that 10 minutes of that song, it actually was 20 minutes, and it was edited down for the Donington.
Okay, so the real
DVD.
One, yeah.
It was 20 minutes.
Right, yeah.
And at the end of it, it's like And we're all of us, by the way, you know, Angus, Brian, Cliff, everybody, Malcolm, just gone. You know, there's no more energy left.
Right.
And then you take 5 minutes, encore, you know.
Do Highway to Hell and you're done. And that's the thing for people listening. Let There Be Rock is the famous solo section where Angus plays. And the rest of the band just goes, banana, doot, banana.
Yeah, that's
doot,
right.
Banana, doot, banana. Which you think, oh, it's not so bad. But try and do it. I try and do it sometimes, just drums. And all you got to do is just snare kick with a hi-hat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can do it for 10, 20, 30 seconds. It's not bad. But try and do it, like you said, for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
And try doing those 16s on the hi-hat.
That's how you lost your hair.
You can go fours. Try doing 16s.
Dang it.
For 20 minutes.
You told me a great story last time that when you guys did that, like in the early 90s, that some kind of a festival that Metallica and Motley Crue were on, and Tommy Lee and Lars were standing in the wings waiting for you to make a mistake on that song.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They used to bet. It's not a mistake. I used to take a rest. And my rest was... that was it. Da-da-da-da-da-da was my rest.
Yeah.
And they would bet when that rest would be.
Oh, okay.
And I only took the rest through fear. Literally through, I'm not going to get through this song if I don't take a rest.
Yeah.
And it was literally da-da-da-da-da-da back into the 16s. Why did I do that? I like to push myself as far as I can. Sometimes on this last tour, Angus asked me not to do the 16s quite so much, so that he could put some, the way he felt about doing some blues licks in these. That was like the last third of the tour, the last third of the 2 years. But usually it was always, in Donington times, in the 90s, it was always, I wouldn't let up. It's funny, I saw, thinking about Lars there, our first gig was at...
Coachella.
Coachella Festival. Thanks, Jack.
No problem. That's why I'm here.
He's here for me, yeah.
We did two gigs there, 2 weekends apart, I think. And the first time, this guy jumps in front of me, and I went, Lars, hello. I haven't seen him for decades, of course. Actually, tell a lie. No, I have been to a few Metallica gigs.
Sure, yeah.
While I've been in the same country as them. So I still hadn't seen him for a long, long time. And he said, I've been still over there watching you for about 20 minutes. Of course, he was talking to other people. And it was in an open area, like backstage area, with caravans for us to use. And he said, I've been still over there. When are you going to warm up for the gig or get yourself psyched up for the gig? And I went, what do you mean? He said, well, you haven't even changed your stance for 20 minutes. And I was holding a cup of tea, just drinking this tea, because I never drink before a show. And when are you going to warm up? When are you going to psych yourself up? I went, what are you talking about? He said, well, in Metallica, we have a massage for half an hour, and then we talk to our psychologist, and then we go in the practice room and we play for about 20, 30 minutes. And I went, no, I just pick my sticks up and play, man.
You walk on stage. What was some like the main difference? Like, okay, now, like, as you mentioned, Malcolm was kind of the backbone of the band and the leader of the band in so many ways, and now he's gone. So Angus basically takes over that role.
Yeah.
What was the biggest difference that you felt in not having Malcolm Young on stage live?
Oh, well, he made my life so easy as a drummer, because I could just, I knew he was absolutely in time. Don't get me wrong, Stevie did a great job.
Sure, of course.
But it's like the confidence. You knew that he was the man, you know? And, you know, he would let you know if anything went wrong also, which only once did he ever have to say anything to me, once.
What was the problem?
Oh, it's a long story to tell, but I had a massage in Albuquerque, and the lady said, the next day you'll have more energy than you can absolutely deal with. And I went, yeah, okay, yeah, sort of thing, mentally. Mm-hmm. But she was right. So I got on stage, and it's the only time in my life where I was pushing.
You pushed it all.
And Malcolm leant over and went, you're pushing. I went, okay. Thanks for telling me. And that was the only time ever in, 3 years of touring or something. And he had great judgment, by the way, also.
In what way?
With everything. great ears, and so does Angus, by the way. We were recording Razor's Edge and just listened to tracks, and he goes, "What's that?" And it's like, "What's what?" Even the producer's going, and engineer's going, "What's what? That? What's that noise?" And it was like, "Well, like, play it again, play it again. There, that one. What? I can't hear a damn thing." Nobody could. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Break it down, break it all down. Let's find out what that noise is." And he broke it down, and it was like a feedback from the guitar pickup.
Hmm.
And he had heard it amongst everything else. And
wow.
It was just, everybody just looked at each other and went, "Wow," literally, "Wow."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they sort of doctored that up a little bit, mm-hmm. but it was enough. So great years, wonderful
right,
years.
Right.
And also George, of course, who's no longer with us, George yeah. Young, brother George. He was there at that time. And he had to leave for health reasons, actually. And then we all moved. This was in Dublin, in Ireland. And then we moved to Vancouver, Canada. Mm-hmm. To record
over there,
the rest
right.
of it.
Right, right, right. So not having Malcolm on stage, like you mentioned, it was a little bit different rhythm-wise. But with Angus kind of taking control and the band was still on top of everything, the tour ended up very, very, very good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing dropped, you know? It was exactly the same. You know, it couldn't be exactly the same, of course. Mm. But many fans just didn't notice that there were different people on stage.
Well, they really don't. Like, people like us know, you know, the intricacies of who's in the band. But, you know, if my wife went to AC/DC, she would see Angus and she'd see the guy with the hat on that sings. And that's about all that she knows.
Yeah.
Most people, and in a lot of ways, Stevie even kind of looks like Malcolm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you couldn't even, you wouldn't even know.
No, he's a family member, isn't
yeah.
he? You know, the resemblance.
Same kind
there.
Of hair, same
in fact,
face.
In photographs, Stevie often got called Angus.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure. People can see
and
that.
And here's
as well.
Angus shopping in Los Angeles. Yeah. No, it's not.
Did Angus ever, now Angus is kind of leading the band, did he ever have to give you any, you're pushing it type of moments? Did he ever
not,
give you crap?
Not pushing it, but. That's a single bass drum there,
mm-hmm.
you know, not a double bass drum, not a da-dum, it's a bum.
Oh, that's what he would tell you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Technical terms
oh, yeah.
as well.
I always listen, whether it's Jimmy Page suggesting something
mm-hmm.
or whoever I've worked with or David Gilmour, it's, you know, you listen to the guy who's employing you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right, exactly.
Simple as that.
Yeah. What are the differences between you and Phil Rudd as a drummer? What do you see in Phil's playing?
That's so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping the groove, which is the most important thing. More important than flying around the kit or whatever. Economical, I think is the word, as far as Phil is concerned. I can play different things, but with AC/DC, I do not, because it's got to be boom bap, boom bap. Has to be. AC/DC cannot work any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Angus, as long as he's up front, it'll be AC/DC.
Right.
And to me, that's the most simplistic way of putting it. You know, going back to Phil, it's up to people to decide, not mm. me. I just do my job
sure.
the way I'm asked to do it, to the best of my ability. There was a lot of vitriol from fans in the beginning. Of course, I understand that. That's a sort of
but you would think
dropped
that,
off quite a bit.
Of course, because listen, you were in the band before. You played on possibly their best song, maybe their biggest song, with the exception You Shook Me All Night Long and Thunderstruck. And you know, Phil can't do it, A, because he's not allowed out of the country or whatever it is.
No, right.
So it's like somebody has to play the drums. So it's better that it's you than anybody else on the planet, in my opinion.
Well, but I still got so surprised by the call.
Mm.
You know, I didn't know who they were going to call. I was hoping, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't I didn't bet the farm on it.
Yeah.
I just literally, I was shocked and surprised when it happened, when I got that call in Switzerland. And then it was like, wow, this is fantastic. And it took me a while to sink in.
Did you ever, I mean, I don't know if Angus is really the warm and fuzzy guy that's ever going to sit down and tell you. Did you ever find out, like, you know, you were always the guy that we were going to choose, or this is what Malcolm's choice would have been? Or did you ever even get into it? Or did you just say, I got the gig, I'm not going to ask any questions?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
I'm here. Mm-hmm. I don't need to know why.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm just here. And I've always said it's a privilege and an honor to play with those guys in any circumstance. I didn't play on the video because Phil couldn't make the video. We didn't know why at the time.
Right.
But I was in the States and the guys were in UK, I think. And Dick only found out, Dick Jones only found out that Phil couldn't make it like within 12 hours. And there was no way I could have got from the States. I think it was in LA or Vegas. There was no way I could have got from there to the shoot, the video shoot, and you know how expensive those are, in time. So Dick called a friend of his to like sit in for the videos.
If you see that, I think Rock or Bust and I think Rock Those Blues Away or whatever it is, you'll see another guy there, but they never really show him. He's just kind of in the background out of focus.
Just to show there's a drummer there.
Yeah, that there actually is a drummer there. Yeah,
there's a guy waving his arms around.
Yeah.
No.
That's great. Let's talk about Brian Johnson, because in the middle of this tour, there's a huge change when Brian's gone and Axl comes in. Did you, like, with Brian leaving, because the word that I heard that Brian had said that he was going to retire after the tour was over.
Like, and then, Cliff did.
Cliff did, right.
Has.
As far as Brian's hearing and all of this stuff, did you know anything about this before it had happened?
Only that Brian was complaining about his performance continually throughout the tour. And it was to us, it was to friends. You know, it wasn't to the press or anything.
Yeah.
Just coming off going, oh, I'm not feeling good about this. And I use in-ear monitors. And I could hear him. And to be honest, I kept saying to him, Brian, it's not as bad as you think it is. Mm-hmm. It really, I can hear you perfectly. The first time in my life, by the way, I could hear every note that the whole band played and sung. Because of the in-ear monitors, not wedges down my feet.
Thank you to JH Audio.
And the... Oh, right.
Yeah.
What was that again, Jack?
Sorry, have you not got your monitors in?
So you were hearing him and he was sounding good.
To me, it was... Yes, it wasn't half as bad. He was coming off going, oh, I don't know. I'm disappointed in... It was only in his performance, which is really professional, you know. And obviously it came to a head and he just didn't, for whatever reason, I don't know the inside story, okay? Mm-hmm. He left to go to a funeral of a great friend and he was supposed to be back in a week's time and he didn't come back. And it's like, so I was told, Brian isn't coming back and we're going to get somebody else to fill it. Somebody else? You're going to get somebody else? Brian Johnson not there and you're going to get somebody else? Yeah. Well, we committed to the tour, so we must honour the dates. I think they were all delayed, weren't they?
Yeah, he's pushed back or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. So we did try some people out in Atlanta, Georgia, actually. And then... I said to Dick, have we got a day off tomorrow? There's nothing in my diary. Is it a day off? He said, no, tomorrow is Axl Rose. I went, what? So that's when I first knew. I went, wow. So, okay, we'll see how that's going to pan out. Came in the next day. There's Axl standing there. I went, hello, man. We shook hands and I thought, this guy seems okay. Because I've heard all the stories, you know. And then he started to sing and it was like, my God, this guy is hitting notes that dogs can hear.
Mm-hmm.
Only dogs can hear. And it was a revelation. I never knew he had that voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only knew the Guns N' Roses stuff. Of course, what else would I know?
Right.
And I didn't equate the Guns N' Roses voice with what Axl can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's staggering. Staggering. What a singer.
Right.
So I thought, well, this is the right guy for the gig.
It's unbelievable. So who are some of the guys that you tried out before Axl?
I won't mention any names.
Were they names of some notoriety? Did they have some name value?
No.
Okay. We're just unknowns.
Put it this way. Yeah. Unknowns.
Wow.
And strangely enough, I just did a gig in Bonfest in Scotland, and where they celebrate Bon.
Yeah.
And it's on every year.
Mm-hmm.
In a place called Kirriemuir.
Yeah, that's where he's
Scotland.
From, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he lived there when he was a child. And I walked into the mobile toilet block, and in there is one of the singers. He'd been asked to be a guest with one of the tribute bands that was playing. I think they played the night before.
Right.
So I walked in and went, geez, what are you doing here?
Just waiting for you in there.
The thing with Axl, though, that's so interesting is that he's got the voice, like you mentioned, like, you know, talk about Brian Johnson. We all love Brian Johnson, a great singer.
Of course.
But at
great personality.
Sure.
Wonderful guy.
Sure. But Brian Johnson in 2016 is not the Brian Johnson of 1980. So when you hear a song like Hell's Bells, which could probably be the hardest AC/DC song to sing, Brian's not singing it like he used to. He's you know, singing under it and changing the melody a little bit so it's not as high. Right. Axl did not do that. Axl sang those songs exactly the way Brian did on the record, and that was crazy to hear. And the other thing I thought was that Brian sang the Bond songs because that's his job.
Yeah.
Axl is Bond. Like, he loves Bond.
Yeah.
You know, he had that same swagger.
He's a huge fan of AC/DC.
Yeah.
Axl. He asked for some songs to be done. You know, the new ones, new, of course, old songs, but he actually requested that, can we do Riff Raff? He says, I was right there when he said it.
Yeah.
Can we do this? Can we do that? Do you know them these days? And Angus goes, no, we don't, but we'll learn them. And we did.
Yeah.
Within the next few days, we'd learned those songs. Of course, we knew them anyway, but just putting it together.
Sure, of course.
You always understand that.
Yeah, because there was Riff Raff was in there. I think Rock and Roll Damnation.
Yep.
I know you tried Touch Too Much a couple times.
Yeah, we played it. Yeah. It's my favorite song, by the way.
Yeah, but it's not really a great live song, right? It didn't translate too well?
No. Yeah. Well, people were screaming when we played it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
But I noticed you only played it a couple shows and then got dropped.
I remember more than that, to be honest. But it wasn't every single show.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I can't remember, but it was great to play that.
Yeah.
I remember when I first heard that, I think it was Highway to Hell, and I played that whole album. I bought the album. I was already a professional drummer.
Right.
I think I told you this story before. I bought the album and played it over and over and over. And in the end, my favorite was Touch Too Much, and it's still... that and Riff Raff, I think, is my...
The ones, yeah.
Just my two favorite songs.
But that injects a lot of, even like you mentioned, their old songs, but playing those new old songs, it injects some new fire into the band.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes, yeah. It did. It did. It fired up Angus also, especially in rehearsal. He was running around the room playing, with enthusiasm.
Right.
Not that he isn't enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, stand up and play, but this was like, wow, this is great. This is fired up beyond.
You know? Now, you mentioned you'd heard all the stories about Axl Rose and all that stuff, and you know, the stories are stories, but what was he like as a bandmate?
He was great. Mm-hmm. He told jokes. He was in the dressing room, you know, just hanging out and, you know, he was just a band member. He told a story, actually, on the Guns N' Roses tour, which I saw a few gigs of, two or three, actually. And he said, I've been to boot camp. I've been to the Young's boot camp.
Hmm.
And what do you mean? What do you mean? He said, well, if you screw up, you get the boot. He said that on stage.
Because you always hear, though, you know, the problems with Guns N' Roses in the past was Axl's late to be on stage and he's not going out there when he should. On this Guns N' Roses tour, that never happened. And I think, A, maybe he's just grown up, but I think maybe playing with AC/DC, where he's not the boss and he's not the be-all end-all, he probably, like you said, if he's going to do this job, he's going to do it under the rules of what AC/DC is. And you show up on stage and you get there on time and all these other things.
Yeah, he was never late. Mm-hmm. We never went on stage late. I think once we had a malfunction, shall we say, electronic-wise, and we had to delay a little, but that was I think that was only once, and that has never happened in the history of AC/DC, where there was maybe a 30 or 40 minute delay because of this malfunction. And it's too technical for me, but
right.
it was the back line wasn't working properly, and that was the only time that in, and Angus remembers everything. He said it's the only time it's ever happened that we've delayed or got it wrong because of whatever reason. So they've never done it before except for this one time. So, and everybody's always on time. You know, thanks to Tim, the tour manager.
He gets that rolling, right? Now, yeah. did you ever hang out with Axl after the show? Because he still likes to have a couple drinks. I know you do. And the rest of the guys, I think, in AC/DC pretty much don't. Angus is just a teetotaler tea guy.
No, Angus doesn't drink. Mm-hmm. He drinks tea. But the other guys do.
Okay.
Of course, there's only Cliff and Stevie. Stevie doesn't too much. He very, very occasionally, on his birthday, he might have a drink. But, yeah, Axl hang out. Occasionally see him in the bar after a gig, wherever, all over the world. And the people he travels with are just great people.
Mm-hmm.
His entourage, if you want, are just really, really nice people, which, again, is surprising. You would expect, you know, the entourage to be like, you know, bit leery is the way we put it in Britain. But
bit
they
leery.
Weren't at all. Just means Jack knows what it means.
Leery. I was literally going to sum it up by making a noise, which doesn't really sum it up at all.
But they were just the most wonderful people and are still the most wonderful people.
And once again, Jack and I came and saw the show at Madison Square Garden with Paul Heyman in a three-piece suit, which is interesting. But But you actually, later on that night, you saw Axl and had a couple drinks.
Yeah, I was at the bar in New York. Yeah, I even texted Dad saying, because you texted me wondering where I was, and I texted you back saying, I was just at the bar with Axl.
Oh, that was on the roof.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus. Yeah. He was there. But once again, like this whole, Brian leaves and then suddenly Axl comes in. And I was thinking, like, what a great move. Because, like you said, singing-wise, he's perfect. I love the fact that he stayed back at the amps like the other singers of AC/DC always has.
Yeah.
Always have, you know, with Stevie and Cliff. But I was like, if you're going to take superstar singers that have the voice and the name value, there was three guys that I thought of. Axl, who was the perfect guy. I thought Sammy Hagar could have done the gig.
Yeah.
And I thought Steven Tyler could have done the gig.
Right.
As far as vocal talent.
Yeah, yeah.
And name value. But Axl was the best guy for it.
Absolutely. I couldn't even think of anybody else doing it now.
Do you think, and I know you don't really know because they probably don't tell you anything until you need to know it, but do you think there's a chance that there'll be another album with Axl and AC/DC?
Yeah, even if I knew, I couldn't tell you. But I don't know.
Yeah. But do you think, I mean, you don't know, none of us do, but it was such a great mix. And once again, like you said, there's some fans that were not happy about it, but the majority, I think at one of the shows, 5,000 people wanted refunds and 10,000 people wanted to buy the tickets that those 5,000, you know.
Absolutely, yes, because it was all sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And then some fans, of course, I understand it completely,
sure,
went, yeah, don't fancy this. So they gave the tickets back. But there were the other people that couldn't get into the stadium mm-hmm. that just immediately bought all
couldn't
those tickets.
Couldn't wait to
up.
Get there, yeah.
Exactly. And it's, they were disappointed they couldn't get tickets in the first place.
Right. When I went and saw them with Jack in Madison Square Garden, Anthrax were there. And Charlie Benanti, the drummer, and Scotty and the guitar player are AC/DC fanatics. And they told me not only is that the best AC/DC show we've ever seen, it might be the best rock and roll show we've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
And I was worried about what their reaction would be because they're such AC/DC snobs. But they were like, we didn't know what to expect, but it was so great. We can't wait to see more, you know, to wow. do more of it, right?
I remember those guys being there,
yeah.
of course.
Yeah.
We had pictures taken.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
With each other. Yeah. I know. It's, that was great. I was really pleased to see those guys at the concert because mm-hmm. you don't often find bands, oh, I'm too cool for that.
Yeah.
I'm too cool to go hang.
AC/DC you know? Kind of trumps all that, though. One more thing I was going to say, too, that I thought was really good. You're talking about adding extra songs is that the very last show of the whole tour, I think, was like in Washington, D.C. or something.
Philadelphia.
Yes.
Philadelphia.
And you added Problem Child for one show.
No, we did it more than once.
Did you?
Yeah, we did it a few times.
Okay, but it was just more towards the end of the tour.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. Like most bands would just go, oh, you know, we'll try it next tour. But like, you know, we got three shows left. Let's bang it out and do it. You know?
Yeah, I know. No. We did it, more than three, four, five times, I'm mm-hmm. sure. Funny thing is, I remember that show for the second time, Dave Grohl came along.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you'd met him before, had you, Jack?
No. I remember when we found out he was
it's
coming.
It's funny, when Dave meets... Dave, yeah.
Yeah, you can call
when
him Dave.
When he meets people, he goes up and goes, hi, I'm Dave. And yeah. I went, I know you can Dave. And he goes, I don't know what else to say. So we arranged, Jack and him arranged to meet in this Irish pub up the road from the hotel. Mm. And Jack got there and had some drinks with him. And I was trying to get changed and get to the bar. And we missed each other, but like Jack said, that people were...
It was starting to get a little
isn't
bit...
Isn't that Dave Grohl over there?
Yeah. You know, the thing is, though, like he wasn't overly inconspicuous because he was in the corner of the pub, but he was wearing the flashing Angus horns, devil horns in the corner. So it's like you could easily spot him. He wasn't hidden at all.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he is a great guy. He loves rock and roll for sure. A couple last questions. Just talking about Cliff Williams, you mentioned that he'd retired at the end of the tour, and that was always his plan all the way through. What was it like for him and for you to see that? I mean, that's a long time, 40-year vet, but he was going to retire, and he stuck to it.
Yeah, he even went longer than he said because, of course, the tour was delayed because Brian and Axel thing, and he was going to leave... like what 4 months or 6 months before or something, and he hung in there and finished the tour, which is great. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it's like, who's gonna be on bass?
Right I saw that last show too. Angus kind of pushed him up the rampway. I think Cliff was scared to death. He's never been past the microphone on the stage. He went down the catwalk there for a little
bit. That's right. Never gone in front of the drum riser.
Yeah. did you have any farewell words with him at all?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I think we said all that the night before, probably in Washington, if not before that. And then before he left, he called me. I was still in bed. Mm-hmm. He called the room and said, you know, great working with you. And, you know, it's really has been great. And I, you know, feeling a bit teared up, actually. So it was an end of an era.
Yeah,
most
for
definitely.
Sure.
And he's a great guy, just very, very quiet and unassuming and just a genuinely nice guy.
So now, and I know you don't know, but just if you were going to theorize, what's the future for AC/DC? Because now, once again, you've lost another member of this machine rhythm section that's famous. You know, so you'd have to break in a new guy, find somebody. I don't know if there's any other young brothers or nephews that play
there probably
guitar
is.
Or bass or whatever.
Oh, all drums.
Drums. Do you ever hear anything from that camp? Do you have any idea, any theories even to yourself of what's going to happen over the next few years with AC/DC?
No, I'm pretty philosophical when it comes to life. Yeah. You never know. And then when it happens, you go, wow, I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. You know, so... You know, there's nothing as constant as change, to quote a Zen saying.
Yeah.
And you try to accept things as they come. So Angus knows what's going to happen, and he's the only person, to my knowledge, that knows this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we just got to wait and see.
One day you'll get a call and be back on a plane to wherever.
Oh, please. No, that would be wonderful.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
would.
It
really
it's interesting would. To think, like, who could be a guy that plays bass in AC/DC.
Oh, I wouldn't you know? Like to.
Once again, it's not an easy gig to have.
No.
You know?
No, absolutely. You know, there was, strangely enough, going back to when Cliff joined, 40 years ago, there was a short list, and the short list was Cliff Williams and bass player who's a great friend of mine from Man From Man's Earth Band, Colin Paddington. And we worked together, Colin and I, for like 6-7 years, or certainly 5-6 years. And that was the shortlist of Cliff and Colin.
Yeah.
And they went with Cliff.
Yeah.
Because they're so similar in style. You can't tell that there's no join there between Cliff and Colin.
Right.
Now, the reasons for going for Cliff, well, I've no idea. But
obviously the right decision.
Yeah. You know, Colin is, as I say, is still a friend. And like Cliff, just a really nice guy. But you triggered me thinking about that. I'm not saying.
Yeah, sure, sure.
You know.
It's, to me, it's like you just mentioned something. The brand name of AC/DC is so huge. As long as Angus Young is the face of the band, still playing, still wants to play. And now with this superstar connection of Axl Rose that actually really works, the two biggest bands in the world joining forces, it'd be like, you know, if Paul McCartney joined the Rolling Stones. Like for rock and roll.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter who's playing, who's not playing, who's on bass or whatever, as long as it's this Angus Young, and now that he has this Axl connection, AC/DC can go on for as long as Angus wants it to go on.
Yes.
You know? And I think, you know, you would probably know this more, or just maybe just the fantasy, that when Malcolm started, you know, fading away, that he probably had a deal with Angus. If you're going to continue on without me, continue on without anybody. You just go as long as you want to go.
Yeah, I think they must have had those because Malcolm knew he wasn't going to be, you know, well enough to have any input within a certain length of time. And I'm sure they discussed every option. And Malcolm being as magnanimous as he was, he would have said, like he said in the beginning, you go out there, put that suit on, and you go
play
out
the solos,
there.
Yeah.
But I don't want to wear the suit. You put that suit on again. Well, you wear the suit. No. You get out there and be the front man. And that's about the truth of it, actually. That's
right,
how
sure.
it started.
Yeah. And that's where we're at now, like you said. So what do you do now that the AC/DC thing is kind of on hold? Back to the timeline?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris Lade Timeline. Sorry to use the full title. It's on Facebook, yeah. folks. No, we're working all the time. In fact, working this weekend and every weekend for the foreseeable future.
And you played songs from your entire career?
Yes.
Tell
including
some of the
Man From Man's Earth Band, Uriah Heep. And people are actually stunned. We've had amazing reviews.
Well, let's go through the Man From Man's Earth Band.
You were in this.
Uriah Heep, the Firm with Jimmy Page.
Yeah.
David Gilmour stuff.
Yeah.
AC/DC stuff.
Yeah.
What else is there? Asia? No, was it Asia? No, it's not Asia.
Yeah, we
Asia.
Do. We do, yeah. Tom Jones. Even Tom Jones.
There you go.
That's a secret, Jack. That's classified.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, have I spoiled it?
You
spoiler alert.
Oh.
But so you're just keeping your chops up and keeping it. You're a road dog. This is what you do.
That's exactly what I do. Yeah. Even at my age, I'm just really, really enthused about playing. I'll only stop when I can't play with the same power mm-hmm. that I always play with, because that would really disappoint sure. me, and it would disappoint other people too.
It's interesting, like now, you know, with rock and roll, there's really no cutoff date and when you can and can't play. And talking about the Stones, like I think Charlie Watts is 75 or 76, and obviously Rolling Stones drums isn't Let There Be Rock.
No.
But still, you got, you know, Paint It Black and Gimme Shelter and, you know, Start Me Up. It's some rocking stuff. He's still handling it and playing great. So,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of the role model for everybody that's a rock and roll drummer at this point.
I saw them, I think it was last year in Paris, whenever that Paris mm-hmm. gig was. It might have been 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I saw them on stage. That was my first real professional gig with Tom Jones, was supporting the Rolling Stones.
Oh, wow.
When they just brought their first single out, which is a Chuck Berry song called Come On.
Wow.
And we played a tiny club in Oxford Street in London. And that was really, although we didn't get any money for it, that was my first real professional gig yeah. in London, as opposed to South Wales.
Right.
So that was a great place to start. You know?
Just a couple more things that I want to ask about. One, you mentioned Bonfest in Kirriemuir, Scotland. Did you ever meet Bon Scott?
Once.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There was, I used to live in Camden, where Bon also lived and unfortunately died also. Mm-hmm. And there was a late night bar in a Greek restaurant, downstairs in a Greek restaurant. And I went in there one night and he was in there. So I was like, he was drunk and I was drunk. But it was enough to say hello and yeah. chat and, you know. Mm-hmm. So I did meet him.
Mm-hmm. There's a great picture, and you kind of talked about this story on the last time, but it was a long time ago, and refresh my memory, of you, Elvis Presley, and Tom Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
And explain that picture.
Oh, wow. I think I was 21, mm-hmm. which is, 5-10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we went to Elvis's suite. That was Tom, myself, and a few members of the band. And he was just a really, really nice guy. Very quiet. He didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
We were drinking. He was playing an album, and just one album over and over. But he was, and this was like probably the third or fourth time I'd met him. Tom and him were friends by now. I wasn't there when they met for the first time, but I met him and Priscilla actually on Hawaii in the late 60s. And that picture was taken in Vegas. And just after that meeting, he asked me to play drums for him. And cut a long story short, I couldn't because I was contracted to Tom.
Oh, wow.
And they wouldn't let me out of the contract. Even this was supposed to be just a month.
Uh-huh.
So
he wouldn't let you out?
No. And I should have just walked. Sorry, but I was 21 at the time.
Sure.
And it's like, you know. I wish that is like,
absolutely.
That is the worst decision I ever made in my professional life.
When the firm started, I remember it came out and everyone was talking about the bald drummer. When did you shave your head? Because in 1985, not a lot of guys had shaved heads.
No, I did it in 1982.
Uh-huh.
The only guy, I think, was the drummer for Australian band. I think it was Rose Tattoo. I'm not.
Okay.
Oh, no, it wasn't Rose Tattoo. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry.
The singer was bald, Angry Anderson. Yeah,
that's right.
Midnight Oil or something like that?
No, it wasn't Midnight. No,
that was later on, yeah.
They weren't around then.
Yeah.
No, the drummer was... I'm so sorry. No, I can't remember.
What made you decide to do it, though? Because it's a very radical thing to do back
in
those days.
At the time, I was working with Gary Newman.
Uh-huh.
Here in my car, I was that guy, and Jack knows him.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah.
Um, And the band, I was feeling quite old then. I must have been 35. I can't remember chronologically. And all the band were like 21, 22, and I thought. And I was going grey. So I thought, let's get rid of it. I've been thinking about it for years. But when I did it, nobody had shaved heads.
Nobody?
Nobody in the street. Not even military had shaved heads. Now it's quite common.
Yeah, yeah.
I think guys are getting old.
Last question for you, Chris. What's your favorite AC/DC song to play live?
Well, as I said, Touch Too Much. I love playing Riff Raff.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're all just genius songs. In fact, on Timeline gigs, I always thank the guys for writing the songs, because AC/DC is half the set. The other stuff, awfully sorry, chaps. The other material, music, is people like Uriah Heep, Man from Man's Earth Band, all that.
It's interesting to me, though, because even with Phil through the 90s playing Thunderstruck, like all those songs are his, but Thunderstruck was the one song that wasn't, and it didn't have the same feel when he played it as when you play it. So that's cool to know that one song in the set is your song.
Yeah.
You wrote the drum part for it, and it's one of their biggest tunes.
Right.
Right.
And strangely, when he came back into the band for the first time, I visited the guys, Cliff and Brian, just to say hi. They were in London. I lived outside London. Arranged to meet them. I went to their apartments, in Kew Gardens, I think it was, actually, come to think of it, in London. And I said, should we go to the pub? Yeah, let's go to the pub. So I said, is Phil going to come, do you think? And he went, well, I'll go ask him. So Cliff went away. And I could, he was upstairs, and I could hear him playing the demos that I had done for the next album.
Wow.
So he was learning my parts.
For the Ball Breaker record.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Which is which is something. Instead of me learning his parts,
he's learning yours
all the time. He was learning mine. So a little bit of fame there or whatever.
True, yeah. Well, Chris, it's great talking to you, man, and I'm excited to see what happens over the next few years. And best of luck as always.
Yeah. Oh well. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks to Chris Slade. And remember, the Chris Slade Timeline, doing live gigs in lieu of waiting for AC/DC to start up. The Timeline will be playing the Musicool Festival in France on June 16th. Follow Chris on Facebook at Chris Slade AC/DC and on the Twitter at Chris Slade Drums. And thanks to Chris and his son Jack, my sidekick, Fozzie stage manager. Thanks for the repeat visit to Talk is Jericho to talk about AC/DC, Axl Rose, Brian Johnson. Like I said, AC/DC does not do interviews, and here we are exclusively on Talk is Jericho with the drummer from AC/DC, just like last summer when we had Duff McKagan on, exclusive Guns N' Roses. Nobody, I repeat, nobody from those bands does interviews, but we had them both right here on Talk is Jericho. We get the biggest scoops, and I got the biggest scoops happening at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, setting sail October 27th. I want you to book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We just announced that Impact Wrestling will be on board in some capacity. We don't know yet. Remember, when you book your cabin, all activities, all inclusive, all stand-up comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greet signings, pictures, autographs, concerts, and the Ring of Honor Sea of Honor tournament, and whatever Impact is going to do, it's all inclusive. The only thing you got to pay for are drinks and gambling. And remember, it's a cruise ship. There's nowhere to go, so you will be hanging out with Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, Mick Foley, Noel Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Don Callis, Paul Lazenby, Pat Patterson singing karaoke, Conan, Disco Inferno, Hurricane Helms, Beyond the Darkness, Dave and Tim, Colt Cabana, who just won his lawsuit against the WWE, and Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show, Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Sal and Q from the Impractical Jokers, Busted Open Radio is going to be there, Craig Gass, Corey Taylor's playing, Phil Campbell, the Bastard Sons are playing, King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project, The Cherry Bomb, Shoot You Through a Blizzard of Ozzy, and Fozzy Plan. Brian Cage is going to be there, Melissa Santos. The list goes on and on and on. And remember, the PS de Resistance, the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament happening in the middle of the ocean. The winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be there. He might be the IWGP champion if he wins against Okada this weekend. Everyone's going to be there. Go to the list. Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, the entire Bullet Club, Brandi Rhodes, Kelly Klein, Mandy Leon, Matt Taven, Flip Gordon, the Dogs, Cheeseburger, Frankie Kazarian, and the Briscoe Brothers. Lots of rockers are going to be there. Lots of wrestlers are going to be there. Are you going to be there? Make history. Get your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Don't you dare miss it. Thank you so much for being here. We'll have a great weekend. In the meantime and in between time, have a great, great week. We've got a big surprise show, but I got to track it first for next Wednesday. So it's going to be a little bit of a surprise. So in the meantime and in between time, we will see you soon. Don't forget, Jericho versus Naito, June 9th. I believe that's on Saturday. Go check it out at NewJapanWorld.com. I'll give you the on-the-spot report next week right here on Talk is Jericho. Be cool. We'll see you soon.